Wednesday, May 27, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we do release a new podcast every single Wednesday. Download it, share it. You can get it in a couple places. If you are an iPod user or an iPhone user, go get it off of iTunes. We have a page up there. You can grab it there. If you are a Droid user and you're not an iPod user, you're not an iPhone person, go over to Podcast Republic. You can find it there. If you go out and search for it, you can actually find it in a million different places. It's out there. You know, we bring it just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. And if you haven't checked out the podcast yet, or this is your first time doing so, we're getting some good feedback. Got a lot of people that listen to the show, a lot of people that like it. Trust me, just hang in there. You're going to like it. A couple different ways you can contact me. If you are looking to contact me, you got a comment, you need some advice, you got a concern, you got some feedback. You know, like last week, you got a contribution where you say, hey, you know, I got an idea for a top five. I've got some ideas on a couple things. Send them over to us. You can find me on Twitter. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports, at Facebook, Daily Dose Sports as well. Go over and check out our website. Put up new articles every week. Yes, they're very sarcastic. Yes, it's on the edge of satire, but put up new articles. We'll have some polls. We'll have a few different things up there. There are links to the podcast on the website as well. The website is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can find us there. If you would like to email the show directly and get a hold of us for anything, like I said, need some advice, need to send us something that you've got, that you've found somewhere, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That comes right to us. Got a lot of things to get to today. Have a number of things that I want to talk about today. The NBA playoffs, we're going to talk a lot about the NBA playoffs a little bit. We had a long weekend of sports, and we had some interesting things going on in our long weekend of sports that I want to make sure that we get all caught up on. There are a few things that went on that we want to make sure that we take care of. Got some NFL. NFL just seems to be year-round. Might get a chance to talk a little Major League Baseball, and of course, as usual, we have our Daily Dose Top 5. You do not want to miss that. How was your long weekend? I hope you enjoyed the time that you had. I hope you got a little bit of time off. Maybe you spent it with friends. Maybe you spent it with family. I hope you enjoyed your long weekend. I actually took off last week, and I went down to Dallas for the weekend. And I got to tell you, Texas is a little bit different. And I know we have some listeners down in Texas. We've got listeners, bizarrely, we have listeners a little bit everywhere. We've got some listeners out in California. I've heard from Arizona. I hear from Texas. I've heard from the Midwest, Missouri, Kansas, obviously Colorado. You know, I'm here in Denver, so we hear from people in Colorado. Back on the East Coast, I've heard some people back on the East Coast, you know, Washington, D.C., out into, you know, Maryland, Virginia, a couple different places out there. I've even heard out of the country. I've heard from Germany. I've heard from Russia. I've heard from a couple kind of strange places. We do have a couple listeners up in Alaska, too. But I went down to Texas. And Texas is a little bit different. And I'm not saying that Texas, it's good or bad, but it's different. You know, I went down there, down to Dallas, spent some time with some family, some friends down there in Little D, as we like to call it here in Denver. But if you want an example, like why is Texas different? I mean, what's so different about the state of Texas? I'm gonna give you an example. We're down there for 4 or 5 days, just hanging out, you know, just kind of hanging out with some family, hanging out with some friends, and we had actually a ton of rain down there. It's pouring. Like, I thought I was in Seattle. Just constant rain, overcast every day. Did not see the sun shine until we started coming back. That was the first time we saw the sun. But, you know, down in Texas, the water levels are starting to raise. You're starting to get some snakes come out. You're starting to get some turtles come out. Almost ran over a turtle. About the size of, like, a basketball. And you know, they have, in Texas, they have armadillos. And if you don't know what an armadillo is, go Google it. Go look it up. An armadillo is this weird, I don't even know. It looks like an anteater with a shell on it. I don't even know how to describe it. We have armadillos in Denver, but our armadillos in Denver refers to this mediocre Mexican restaurant chain that will probably leave you with a stomachache. It's a little different. So a friend of ours down there has this armadillo. And armadillo, not a pet. They have an armadillo that is coming in and wreaking havoc on their world. And in Texas, I guess they would refer to armadillos as a varmint. I got a varmint. And they're extremely destructive. They have these huge claws. And with all the rain that they're having, you know, you get these, I guess you get grubs in the soil. I guess they're called grubs or mealworms or I don't know what you call them. But these armadillos come in and they dig up trying to eat these mealworms, trying to eat these grubs and stuff. And so like you just moved in, like our friend, they moved into a relatively new house, new neighborhood, upscale neighborhood, very, very nice. And this armadillo is coming in and it's digging up their, you know, their new sod. It's digging up all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just ripping up their yard. And they do. They cause a lot of problems. They're really, really destructive. So they live in this new house, and they live in this, you know, upscale, nice neighborhood in a suburb of Dallas. And this armadillo is coming in and just ripping up everything, ripping up the yard, ripping up wires, just digging into, you know, starting to dig into actually the foundation of the house. So being from Colorado, he decides, because here in Colorado, we're a little more, I guess, liberal leaning. We're a little more, it's a little different in Colorado. As you know, sometimes we have legalized some things here in Colorado. We're a little more liberal with some of our policies politically. And so he decides, being from here, that instead of, you know, killing this armadillo to get rid of it, he's going to trap it. He's going to trap it, and he's going to do the nice thing, and he's going to do the, you know, the PETA thing. He's going to trap it, he's going to take it out, and he's going to relocate it out, you know, give it a nice farm to go run and play and chase rabbits or whatever they do. So he goes down to the local Home Depot or whatever, and he finds this trap. The trap's like on sale for like $79.99 for this hopefully one-time use. Goes home, sets up the trap, gets nothing. Nothing in the trap. So he's like, well, what do you use for bait with an armadillo? I'm like, dude, I don't even know what an armadillo is. So I don't, you're asking the wrong person. So he's like, well, I heard bananas. So he puts some bananas in there. Nothing. A couple days, nothing. Well, I'll put something else in there. I'll put, like, I guess lettuce or something, they thought. Put cabbage or something in there. Doesn't work. You know, they say, well, put mealworms in there. You can go to like a pet store and buy the mealworms and you can put those in there. And so he goes to the pet store and he buys some worms. He's going to put those actually in there. And he puts them in there. And nothing. So now it's digging up his TV cable, you know, because down there they put the, you can actually put the cable down in the ground. Now he's starting to dig up his cable. Nothing. But so apparently armadillos, they only like stuff right from the ground. And they don't want, like, if it's already out for them as bait, they're not going to use it. That's not going to work out. So he doesn't have any idea, like, what to do. Like, I don't know what to do. So he comes home and he's looking around and he sees the armadillo in his yard. Actually sees it digging in his yard. And like I said, they've got big claws. It's digging chunks out. I mean, dirt is flying. Comes out and he's like, just kind of in a state of panic. He's tried to trap it. He's tried to put the bait out. Nothing is working. He runs in the house, grabs his .22 rifle, blasts the varmint, shoots the varmint right there in the neighborhood. In this little suburb neighborhood, he shoots the varmint right there. And now he's kind of freaking out. And he's like, I don't know what to do. So he runs out and he grabs it and he runs in. And he's going to throw it in the trash can. And when he comes back outside, the neighbors are starting to come out of their houses because they heard the rifle shots. I mean, you hear rifle shots in your neighborhood, you're going to go outside and probably investigate, depending, I guess, where you live. Maybe you're used to it and you just duck. And this is like about 7 p.m. This is like at dusk. So he shoots it. He goes and throws it in a trash can in the garage. And he comes out. And now people are starting to gather. And there's one, you know, gentleman with the big mustache and the sleeves cut off of his dress shirt. And he's walking up. And he's like, hey, what's going on here? And my friend is like, you know, seeing his neighbors come out. Some of these neighbors he's never even met. They're coming out for the first time. He's new in this neighborhood. And he's kind of panicking. And look, what's going on? What happened? Well, I have this armadillo. It's digging up my yard. I bought a trap. The trap didn't work. Well, what did you shoot it with? And he's just freaking out. He goes, I didn't mean to shoot it. I just kind of lost it. It was digging up all my stuff. It was digging up my cables. It's digging up my wires. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And I mean, families are coming to the houses. They're looking at him. And the guy walks up to him, gets a little closer. And he says, I said, what did you shoot it with? Now he's like, he's seriously, I feel bad. He's like near tears. And he's like, I shot it with my 22. And the guy goes, okay. Whew. Because if you shoot it with anything bigger, it will totally wreck the carcass. But with a 22, Phil down the street will stuff it for you for like 20 bucks and you can put it on your mantle. Do you see what I'm saying? Texas is just a little bit different. I know we have some listeners out there. I love you. I get it. Texas is just a little bit different than what we're used to here in Colorado. Hey, we've got a couple things coming out in the world of sports today. First off, and maybe the biggest story coming out, there is a criminal investigation into the way that the World Cup has been awarded. A criminal investigation. Swiss federal prosecutors have opened criminal proceedings related to the awarding of the 2018 and 2022 World Cup. We know that FIFA, this is all soccer, we know FIFA is filthy. We know they're filthy. We've seen it before. Seven officials were arrested and 14 were indicted on Wednesday. And what a lot of this is going back to is the fact that FIFA had a vote for the World Cup, and it was won by Russia in 2018 and by Qatar. I know you're going to see that and say Qatar. It's Qatar in 2022. They say that those votes were dirty. They say that this whole FIFA organization is running a little bit filthy. We're gonna see some more stuff on this. It has been known forever that the governing bodies in soccer are filthy. Now we're actually starting to see indictments and criminal investigations going forward. Now, the reason I bring this up, because we don't talk a ton of soccer on here, so that's really not my point for bringing this up. The reason that I bring this up is I want you to think about, we're going to talk about this in just a few minutes. I just want you to think about, if you have a governing body that is corrupt running sports, just think about that. Just want you to throw that out there. Hey, the Cleveland Cavaliers are on to the NBA Finals. We're going to be talking about that here in a few minutes. The New York Rangers forced a Game 7 last night with a big win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. NHL Game 7s, I'm telling you. I know we'll talk about this a little bit more in the future, but there is going to be a Game 7 over in the NHL to get to the Finals. It looks like the Houston Texans will be the next subject of HBO's documentary series, Hard Knocks. It looks like the announcement is supposed to be coming soon. And, you know, there are a couple teams that said they weren't interested in it. The Cleveland Browns said they didn't want to be on it. The rule, typically, is you can refuse the show if you have a new head coach, if you have been to the playoffs in the past two seasons, or if you have already been the show in the past 10 years, then you can say no. Cleveland keeps saying no, and the NFL keeps going by that. I can't figure that out for the life of me. And once again, as I've said in the past, you're Cleveland. You're Cleveland. If you're the ugly girl and you get asked to prom, you just go. So we're going to get Houston, and I'm going to be honest, I'm not that interested in it. Yes, J.J. Watt will be on there, and that should be a little bit interesting. I want to see about how he goes about his daily business. I guess that will be interesting. But there's really not that many characters in that Houston franchise that I want to see. There's really not that many players on that team that I'm, oh man, I got to see how that works. It's pretty much J.J. Watt and nothing else. We have Golden State and Houston in Game 5 tonight of the Western Conference Finals. Now, here's one thing I just want you to think about. I'm just throwing this out there. If Golden State were to close out Houston tonight in Game 5, we will have the longest shared layoff ever leading up to the NBA Finals. Because, you know, they schedule these NBA Finals games in advance, so they scheduled it. We will have a full week, a full 7 days if the Warriors were to win tonight. So if you're cheering for the Warriors to win tonight, keep one thing in mind. You're not going to have basketball for a full week if they do it. We're going to talk a little bit more about the series over there. We also have tonight Game 6 in the NHL of the Ducks and the Blackhawks. Ducks are up 3-2 in that series. So a couple different things. We actually have some sports. We have some good stuff going on right now. How was your weekend watching sports? Memorial Day might be the biggest day in auto racing these days. And yes, we're going to talk just a little bit of auto racing. You know, I grew up watching the Indy 500. But the Indy 500, it's so full of contrast. And I know this year viewing actually was up a little bit. But it's so few of contrasting things the Indy 500 is. It's kind of confusing. And so I think there's a lot of people, they're just a little bit like, I don't know. Do I watch it? Do I not watch it? It's kind of weird. It's a little bit strange. And viewers were up this year. Now, I wonder if viewers for the 500 were up because in a lot of the country, it was raining. And so people didn't go out and do the barbecue and do the picnic and do all that kind of stuff. You had to kind of stay in the house because it was pouring on you. It wasn't just where I was at in Dallas. It was everywhere. But Indy is so full of contrast. It can be kind of hard to watch sometimes. We saw Juan Pablo Montoya. He won it on Sunday. And didn't it kind of feel like seeing Jean Girard beat Ricky Bobby? I mean, think about this. I want you to think about this when it comes to the Indy 500. Because NASCAR is not this way, but Indy definitely is. I want you to think about this. At the race, everybody, you watch the infield, you watch out in the grandstands, you watch the people that drive in, you know, on the big campers and Winnebagoes. Everybody's drinking. Everybody is drinking. But the winner, when you win, there's no champagne, you drink milk. Everyone at the race, the drivers, everybody, you know, driving at this race is all completely foreign, but we call it the Great American Spectacle. See, do you see the contrast here? And then racing is supposed to be like back in the day, auto racing, especially in America, it was kind of that bootlegger mentality. It was kind of the tough guys. So like I grew up watching like the AJ Foyts. And you know, tough guys, Al Unser, Johnny Rutherford, those kind of guys, where if there was an issue on the track, they would get out with a wrench and they would fix it. If there was an issue with another driver, they would get out and pop you in the mouth. It was that kind of guy. And that is not the kind of guy that we have now. These guys we have now, you see them, they're these little 90-pound nerds that are telling us how, like, the thrust must balance the drag of the race car in order to accelerate. What? You're not the tough, you know, beer drinking kind of race car driver that I grew up, you know, thinking of. And we watch these races and you're like, okay, 33 start. Hey, anybody could win this. You know, we've talked about in the past, these sudden, you know, sudden elimination tournaments, these single elimination tournaments, anybody on this day can win. Right? Right? But over the past 15 years, there are three teams, the Andretti team, the Penske team, and the Ganassi team. They've won 13 of the past 15 races. So can anyone really win? Really? I'm not sure. Now, imagine if in the NFL, three NFL teams had won the past 15 Super Bowls. I don't know if I'm watching anymore. By the way, we have had 11 different Super Bowl winners in the past 15. I do have an idea, though. I have an idea that I just want to throw out there. And I was watching NASCAR and watching, you know, Indy and that kind of thing. I have an idea that I just want to throw out here. Because you see these drivers, and they've got their suits on, they've got their hats on, and there are patches and you know, all these advertisements for all these companies that sponsor them. And I mean, it might be the tires, it might be whoever, it might be, you know, Chevy, it might be Ford, it might be, you know, the person that provided the engines, it might be the person that provided the trailer, whatever it might be. They've got sponsorships all over, everywhere. I mean, you got these guys that are literally, their whole job, when they win the race, they change their hats in and out. Because we got to get that hat on. Okay, yeah, and he had a Honda, and get that hat on, and we change this. Oh, wait, get a different hat. He's had that hat on for 30 seconds, got to get a different hat. All these companies that sponsor these drivers. Here is my idea. What if we gave these same racing suits to political candidates? And then on their suit, we put every single lobby group that is stuffing money in their pockets. Hey, again, the Daily Dose is just here to help people. We're just trying to help people, you know, create a brighter future. That's what we do. Gonna talk a little bit. I can already hear you groaning. Gonna talk a little bit about lacrosse. Yes, we are talking college lacrosse because the NCAA lacrosse championship was played on Monday. Did you know that the lacrosse championship has never been for a team that was from the West? It's never been out West. It's all these East Coast teams back there. It's an East Coast, you know, thing. I think lacrosse obviously is bigger out on the East Coast. You have these older institutions, you have these schools out there, and lacrosse out there is much, much bigger. It has never been West. In fact, the furthest West that it has ever been, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I don't know about you. I don't know about, you know, geography. That's not that far west. Like when I heard, I was thinking like, oh, I don't know, St. Louis, Arkansas. So, no. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, the furthest west it's ever been. And on Monday, your Denver Pioneers beat the Maryland Terrapins 10-5 to bring the title out west. Head coach Bill Tierney came to Denver after winning 6 titles at Princeton. Came to Denver back in 2009, you know, wanted a different challenge. Came to DU. DU is more of a hockey school. If you ever watch, you know, college hockey at all, DU is a big hockey school, not so much a lacrosse school. But in 2010, they made it to the first round of the tournament. 2011, they went to the Final Four. 2013, they went to the Final Four. 14, they went to the Final Four. And finally, this year, they are the championships. He's a phenomenal coach, I guess. I don't know anything about lacrosse. They're out there playing. You got like a baseball that you're throwing around with like some tiki torches and you try to get it in a goal. I no idea. And I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking right now. You're sitting there and you're saying, you are only bringing this up. You are only bringing this up because it's in Denver. And you know what? You are exactly right, because if it was like Washington or something, I could care less. But Denver brought home the lacrosse national championship. And you know, lost in all of this, I think there are some points lost in all this. Lost in all this is I'm just happy for these kids. I'm happy for these youngsters that got to achieve some success. You know, these kids that are named like Stuart and Connor and Ross and Wells. You know, these kind of kids, these trust fund babies that are going to these you know, private schools, finally, they have something go their way in life. It's about time. It's about time things broke right for kids like Wells Stanwyck. Because Lord knows he's going to have to try to live off of his father's inheritance for the next, you know, 80 years. And that is going to be a tough, tough road to go down. NHL tonight, I told you, Ducks are up 3-2 versus the Blackhawks. Trust me on this. The Chicago Blackhawks are not going to go away quietly. They're going to give them a battle. And we may see a game 7 going on in the NHL on the western side. On the eastern side, Rangers and Lightning are now going to game 7. That will be on Friday. If you are not a hockey person, I've told you this in the past, and I swear, I'm not trying to, you know, be this honk for the NHL. It is so, so exciting, though, to watch NHL. You get it into a game 7 situation. You get into those kind of things. Trust me, it will be well worth your time to go try to find these games. I know I've told you in the past, they're on like VH1 or the Cartoon Network or whatever. Go find these games. You will be entertained because every shift is the biggest thing going. Talk a little bit of NFL. There is some news coming out today that apparently Broncos' newly acquired defensive end Antonio Smith will be absent from the start of OTAs because he is under investigation for some sort of criminal allegation. They're saying there is possible child abuse, and it is sexual in nature. Ugh. That just makes your skin crawl, doesn't it? Just makes your skin crawl. Hey, I know I'm the first to make fun of other teams. And when, you know, something like this happens to my team, I've got to own it. I've got to own it. You know, Antonio Smith came over from the Raiders. And now we've got, you know, these problems. It was going to be his first year. I guess that's what we get for getting mixed up with the likes of the Oakland Raiders. We're still waiting to hear on Tom Brady's appeal on Deflategate. You know, we talked about this at length a couple weeks ago, you know, the whole Deflategate thing and where this is going to go. I just have some quick thoughts, just very, very quick thoughts. Patriots owner Robert Kraft obviously pulled the Patriots appeal. And I just want you to think about one thing, because Robert Kraft has been a guy that pushed for Roger Goodell to have full power over matters involving integrity of the game. So do you think I feel bad for the Patriots on this? Your owner was one of the ones pushing for him to have this authority. Now you're going to complain about it? And I realize that the NFL is untouchable right now. I heard some people say, oh, this could ruin the NFL. This isn't going to ruin the NFL. You know, the Ray Rice thing, oh, it's going to ruin the NFL. Right now, I don't know if there's anything that could ruin the NFL. But here's the one thing that the NFL has to keep in mind. And whether you like Goodell or you don't like, and to be honest, I'm not a huge Roger Goodell fan. I think a lot of his decisions don't make a lot of sense. I think sometimes he handles things in ways that don't make much sense. I don't know if he has people giving him poor advice or what it is. I'm not always a huge Roger Goodell fan. But here's the thing that you have to keep in mind if you are Roger Goodell. If you start bringing into doubt the integrity of the game, remember we were talking about the FIFA situation, we were talking about the soccer situation, and the integrity of the game, you want to watch the NFL actually crumble? You want to watch the Roman Empire actually collapse? Start bringing in stuff like the integrity of the game issues. Because I don't care what sport you are. It makes no difference. If I somehow think that games might be manipulated, if I somehow think games might be on the edge of maybe being fixed, maybe the outcome has already been determined, I don't care if it's the NFL or who it is, it's going to get itself in a serious amount of trouble. And that's why this has been such a big thing to the NFL. Everyone, what's the big deal? Who cares what Tom Brady did to the footballs? If you start getting into situations where Vegas doesn't want a betting line anymore, you're going to have big, big, big problems. And by the way, just a quick side note, because if you think it can't happen, I just present to you boxing. I'll just throw that out to you. By the way, where are all the players in support of Tom Brady? I keep waiting for Aaron Rodgers to come out and be like, dude, what's the big deal? Who cares? Philip Rivers to come out and be like, why is this such a big deal? I change the ball. I do whatever. Why is this such a big... Have you noticed that no one has stepped up and said anything? Is that just Patriot jealousy? I know that's what we're going to hear. It's just Patriot jealousy. Maybe. Or maybe they're looking at it and say, dude, what are you, an idiot? Just own it. It leaves me with the feeling that there are some people that maybe know Tom has a reputation for doing this. And now with the Patriots bailing on their appeal, that tells me, honestly, that Kraft and Belichick think Brady probably is guilty. And hey, dude, you're on your own. They're going to distance themselves from this as much as they possibly can. Because I get the feeling that maybe they go, you know what? We've kind of looked into this a little more, and I don't want anything to do with this. Tommy, you're on your own. Touchdown, Tommy. It's your legacy, big boy. Keep an eye on things and see if that Brady appeal actually takes place, like they're saying, or do we really just have some posturing and some posing and Tom's going to, shake his fist at the NFL and say, oh, you guys are ripping me off, and then not really do anything. Something to keep an eye on. We have talked a little bit about Adrian Peterson, running back for the Minnesota Vikings, saying that he does not want to play for the Vikings anymore. He wishes to be traded, and we are starting to see that now as Adrian Peterson is not showing up for OTAs with the Minnesota Vikings. He wants a new team. He wants to be traded. He's kind of doing that whole thing, demanding a trade. Here's the problem. And we have talked about this a little bit in the past. Everybody talks, we're gonna make a deal for him. We're going to make a trade for him. Cowboys are going to get him. This team's going to get him. This team's going to get him. Here's the problem. And I keep saying this. One, when it didn't happen at the draft, when Adrian Peterson didn't get moved at the draft, that told me either the asking price is too high or there just aren't enough interested people in taking that contract. And it is a bad contract. It's pretty heavy. The only way Peterson is going to get out of this deal is if he were to retire or something. I mean, I guess you could retire and come back in a couple years, or just go out and do a LeGarrette Blount and just be as horrible as you can and see if you can get yourself cut, but I don't think that's going to happen. So what we keep hearing is, well, Dallas is going to trade for him. Dallas is going to go get him. The Cowboys are going to go get him. Yeah, here's the problem. Yes, football-wise, that might make sense. And again, if you're playing Madden on your Xbox or your PlayStation 4 or whatever, that might look like a really good idea. Hey, well, Cowboys can just go get him. Jerry Jones has obviously proven he's not afraid to go get people. But here's the problem. He's due $12.75 million. The Cowboys don't have $12.75 million. Right now, they have 12.8 of cap room, but they still have to sign people. So they don't have 12.8. They have less than that. So unless the Vikings would just give Peterson away for just a garbage draft choice, Peterson is going to have to take a huge pay cut to go anywhere else. And that eliminates the Cowboys. He's not going to go there for just, you know, chump change. The only way I see Peterson ended up going anywhere else is, like I said, is if he just says, I'm going to retire, I'm going to sit a year out, and I'm going to come back in another. He hasn't played football in over a year. I don't think Adrian Peterson is going to end up anywhere else. I don't know if he's going to play for the Vikings, but I don't know if he's going to go anywhere else. Let's talk about the NBA. Cleveland Cavaliers swept the Atlanta Hawks last night. They returned to the finals. And in watching that series, you could just see that the Hawks were outmanned. They were outcoached. Sorry, LeBron. I know you probably don't want me to say that David Blatt outcoached anyone, but they were outcoached. And when you watch the Cleveland Cavaliers offense, it's ugly. Folks, it's an ugly, ugly offense. Here is the Cavaliers offense. Isolate LeBron. And by the way, Cleveland isolates LeBron more than any team isolates anyone by far. If you look up the ISO stats, they're doing it like 5-1 what anyone else does. And then they put, you know, they've got a couple shooters. They got Dellavedova, they've got J.R. Smith, they've got Amon Shumpert that they kind of set up for kickout. So if LeBron goes ISO and he dribble penetrate, he drives in, he looks for his own shot. If he doesn't have anything, he's going to kick to one of those shooters. And then you've got someone like Tristan Thompson who is cutting, who is crashing for loose balls, who is crashing for loose rebounds. It's not pretty. I'll be honest. It's pretty ugly offense to watch. But on some level, just in a one-on-one situation, LeBron James is almost unguardable. I mean, what do you do with him? If you're just in a one-on-one situation, and he has had those guys, those shooters that are spotting up, they've knocked their shots down. Say what you want about them, they've hit their shots. So whichever West team, I think it'll be Golden State, but whichever West team comes out and has to play Cleveland, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how they play Cleveland defensively. Because what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to slide some people over to help on LeBron in those one-on-one situations. But see, that's not the key. A lot of people say, oh, you've got to slide over and help. Yeah, everybody knows you got to slide over and help. It's not the help that gets you beat. It's the recover back to the shooter. It's the recover back to the cutter. Those are what get you beat. And so when we're looking at this, it might be in another week, I don't know. But when we're looking at this, keep that just in the back of your mind that if you're going to play against Cleveland, you're going to have to somehow help on LeBron, and then you're going to have to quickly recover, get to shooters, contest shots, and hope that some of these guys go cold. They've been shooting it very, very well. The Atlanta Hawks were horrible on offense. I told you going into the series, I gave Atlanta at least kind of a shot to make the series interesting. I picked Cleveland. I didn't think they would beat them. But I thought that Atlanta could at least come out and do some things offensively. They could spread out. They could get some cutters. They could get some movement. They have some shooters. They have a couple different things that I said, if they'll at least do that, because Cleveland is not a great defensive team. They're better. You know what they're better? They're better without Kyrie Irving and without Kevin Love. That's what's improved their defense. That might be the reason they're going as far as they are, is because they are better without those two players. Kyrie and Love are not very good defenders. On ball, off ball, makes no difference. But the Hawks were so bad on offense. You could watch in that series. They stood and they watched. And you'd have Teague or someone trying to beat someone off the dribble. You had guys out in the corners, and they're just watching. Now, one player we have to talk about. We've got to talk about Dellavedova. Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, guard. Is he a dirty player? You saw, it's happened three times now. Kind of the diving into guys' knees and ankles. He took Kyle Korver out. Kyle Korver is done. Didn't even get to finish the series. Sounds like he will have ankle surgery in the offseason after Dellavedova dove on his ankle. And then he dove at Al Horford, and Horford responded by throwing an elbow at him. Tried to land it on his head. He missed and landed it on his shoulder. Is Dellavedova a dirty player? I've heard a number of different sides. I've heard some guys say, well, you know, he's just scrappy. He's just tenacious. He's just getting on the floor. But when it continues to happen again and again and again, I have to start doubting whether it's just, oh, it's just scrappiness. He's just a scrapper. Yeah, but a lot of guys are scrappy. I don't see guys that are scrappy just, yeah, hey, if you're a scrapper, you dive into knees. That's just what you do. I'm not buying that. I'm not exactly buying that. And it continues to happen. And so when I look at Matthew Dellavedova, I don't look at him and say he's just a filthy player, but there is a dirtiness to his game. And if he can dive into your lower legs, he's going to do it. Now, the situation with him and Al Horford was so strange. He dives into Horford's knees. Horford, like I said, responds and tries to drop an elbow on him. Tried to go like suplex on him. Kind of missed, but he got him in the shoulder, knocked him down. So the refs take about 20 minutes to review this play. And this was in game three. The refs take about 20 minutes. They review the play. And they come back and they say, Horford has been ejected. Horford's gone. That's a flagrant two. And he's gone because he threw the elbow at the neck head area. He didn't connect, but he threw the elbow at that area. And therefore, by rule, he's ejected. Now, this was in a very tight game. In fact, I believe at the time Atlanta was leading the game in the second half. Horford gets ejected. Probably Atlanta's best player, honestly. Then they said Dellavedova is actually going to get a technical for, we're not exactly sure why. Diving into his knees? If he dove into his knees, then why would you give Horford the flagrant two? It didn't make any sense. And they reviewed it for 20 minutes, so I don't know how they managed to not get it. Now, the only reason I say that, I just want you to kind of keep that on the back burner there. Dove into somebody's knees. Horford responds with the elbow to the head, neck area. He didn't connect, but he threw it at that area and kind of hit him in the shoulder. And by rule, he has to be ejected. Again, just throw that in the back of your mind. Now we have Cleveland going on to the finals again. And it just seems like whatever team LeBron is on, he just takes them to the finals. It's the Heat, yeah. It's Cavaliers, yeah. Back to the Cavaliers, yeah. LeBron just can carry a team. And I give the guy credit. He is plenty capable of doing that. Probably the most talented player in the world right now. I realize he's probably on the other side of the best days of his career. I think physically we're starting to see that a little bit, but I don't know if there's a more dominating player than LeBron James right now in the league. Now, I will say this about LeBron. And like I said, one of the most talented players, a little bit of a drama queen, You see him after game three, they win game three, tight game, close game. He's laying on the floor, collapsed. Lindsay Lohan thought he might have been a little too dramatic. Does everything have to be life and death, LeBron? Can you just win a game and be like, yeah, we beat him, walk off the floor? I know. I'm just hating, right? I'm just hating on LeBron. I love his game. Don't get me wrong. Just settle down. It was game three. You don't have to roll around and get carried off like you're Kellen Winslow. Always with that guy. Here's one thing to think about. Something I just want to throw out there. You know, Cavs offensively, like I said, everything is LeBron off his creation and then kick. J.R. Smith is shooting the lights out. I mean, J.R. Smith is absolutely filling it up. And I know, I always feel, you always feel like J.R. Smith is like, never more than like a few steps from like a machine gun and just going crazy. It just always feels like that with that guy. He's out there a ways, but he's playing. He's playing extremely well. He's playing so much better than when he was with the Knicks, right? Isn't he? Isn't he playing so much better than when he was out there with Carmelo and the Knicks? Well, a little bit better. Look at these stats. When J.R. Smith was with the Knicks earlier this season, this isn't going back any time. This is earlier this season with the Knicks. 2-point field goal percentage, he was shooting 40%. Right now at the Cavaliers, 42%. 3-point field goal percentage. With the Knicks, he was shooting 36%. Right now, he's shooting 39%. I don't know if he's playing that much better, but the perception of how you're playing when you're on a winning team sure is nice, isn't it? It's really, really different because we were looking at him with the Knicks. Man, dude, you're a loser. You're a moron. Now, you still might be a moron. But when you're looking at the way he was playing, it's not that different. Granted, he's playing with a little bit better players, and he's playing with a very, very good passer in LeBron James. Obviously, Carmelo Anthony, not exactly known for his passing skills. But the perception of how he's playing is a little bit flawed. He was shooting it pretty well out in New York. Now he's just playing with a lot better players. The Los Angeles Lakers management is saying that Kobe Bryant is done after next year. Notice it's not Kobe Bryant saying that. In fact, when they asked him, he said, my stance is what it's always been. That was his only response. Have you noticed that Lakers management just keeps saying this again and again and again? Hey, he's done after next year. Just so everybody knows, he's done after next year. Kobe's not saying it. He's just, the management is saying it. They want him gone so bad. They are so sick of Kobe. He's hurt every year. His game is diminished to the point where he's almost unrecognizable when he is playing. Keep hoping, management. Keep hoping that he leaves and that he doesn't just say, I got one more year in me. I think I got one more year. Hey, there's a rumor out there that if the Chicago Bulls do fire head coach Tom Thibodeau, that the Lakers might fire Byron Scott and go get him. That is out there. That is what is being talked about, at least, that they have a very high interest in Tom Thibodeau. Don't know if that's gonna take place, but keep that in mind. The problem with the Bulls, for one, they're notoriously cheap. The Bulls are actually holding out firing Tom Thibodeau because they are hoping that another team offers a trade for him. That is why he hasn't been fired yet. That's the only reason he hasn't been fired yet, because they are hoping someone will offer a trade. Hey, how about a draft pick in this for Tom Thibodeau? Here's the problem. If you know stuff is going to be free, why would you go buy it? I know you're going to fire him. I know it's just a matter of time before you fire him. The only chance would be if it was a garbage team that you know he wouldn't go to otherwise. Maybe you could talk a trade that way. Yes, I'm throwing it out there. Nuggets, you can trade your whole roster for him. I don't care. But just remember that. Remember that. Lakers are saying they have a very high interest in Tom Thibodeau if he becomes available. Rockets survived in Game 4 against the Golden State Warriors. Game 5 is tonight. And Steph Curry returned from a concussion. Don't say it wasn't a concussion. Don't give me head contusion. We saw when he went down, and it was an ugly play. Trevor Ariza gives him the pump fake. Steph goes up, ends up landing on the back of his neck, lands very, very hard. And I know I heard some people saying, well, he didn't hit his head. You don't have to hit your head to get a concussion. You have to shake your head to get a concussion. And without a doubt, he shook his head. No question, he shook his head. He had a concussion. When you're squinting at the lights and you're putting the towel over your head, that's a concussion. You know, but these players today, they understand that if you get diagnosed with that concussion, if they're checking you for that concussion, you're going to be sitting like 2 weeks. Steph Curry doesn't feel like he has 2 weeks time to sit. And so, yes, he put the towel over his head, and then he came out and started talking about, I scratched my head or my neck. It's not a concussion, though. It wasn't a concussion. Returned in the same game. Returned. came back and played in the second half. And actually, once he kind of got going, played pretty well. Was not too bad. But don't say it wasn't a concussion. Now, we talked earlier about the whole Al Horford, Matthew Dellavedova situation. Tonight, Dwight Howard has been okayed to play despite punching Andrew Bogut in the face. In that game, he and Bogut get tangled up. And Bogut, without a doubt, in my mind at least, instigates this. He's kind of holding Howard. Dwight kind of pushes off and hey, get off me. And then he swings with his hand and hits Bogut square in the face. I mean, you can say it's accidental. You can say whatever you want to. But again, remember, by rule, if you hit someone in the neck or head area, by rule, that's a flagrant two. And if that's a flagrant two, Dwight Howard would be suspended for tonight's game. But they say, well, it was more of an accidental hit. It wasn't really intentional. And so we're going to let him play tonight. Now, again, kind of a running theme today. Speaking of leagues that do things to sometimes make you think it's a little bit fixed, the NBA. The NBA always, always does these things. It's been happening forever. The NBA just always has a shadiness about it. By rule, Dwight Howard should be out of tonight's game. By the rule that they quoted when they threw Al Horford out of the game, Dwight Howard should be out of tonight's game. But as usual, the NBA, a little bit shady. They've always been a little bit shady. You know, like the Lakers getting the number two pick this year. Like the Knicks getting Patrick Ewing. There's a whole list of things. Maybe sometime we need to go through and look at some of the shady things the NBA has done. I'm sure there's a top five list in there somewhere. So the Warriors and the Rockets get going tonight, game five at Golden State. The key for the Warriors against Houston, and the key to me in this entire series, is it seems like everything the Rockets do well, typically Golden State has done just a little bit better. So they space the floor a little bit better. They shoot the ball from outside a little bit better. They get inside off some of the shot fakes and some of the things that they do a little bit better. And the key really has been the Warriors' defense. Golden State has played very, very well defensively, not just against Houston, but throughout the playoffs. But against Houston, it's really, really showed up more and more and more. I mean, the last, aside from that last game, they allowed 80 points, 98 points. They did give up 106 in the first game, but they scored 110. Golden State's defense has been the key to this series. Game five tonight, they're going to have to do a little bit better job than they did in game four. Because in game four, the Rockets did whatever they wanted offensively. Golden State just played no defense whatsoever. And I realize that James Harden, he's such a tough matchup. Because he's so strong, he can get a shot off whenever he wants, and he is absolutely deadly with that step back. It doesn't matter if you contest it or not, he can hit it anyways. But you know what? The step back, it actually wasn't what buried Golden State in that game. It was the layups. It was the blow-bys. It was the constant points in the paint. And if the Warriors are going to take them out tonight, if they're going to knock off Houston tonight, they have to eliminate points in the paint from Houston. In game four, Houston had 44 of their points in the paint. And this is a team that, again, is a little bit like Golden State. It's spacing, it's spread, it's a lot of, you know, perimeter jump shooting kind of stuff. You're getting almost 50 points in the paint from Houston. They don't have that kind of players. You have Dwight Howard inside. He can't score 50 points in an empty gym. So they're going to have to eliminate the easy looks that Houston got in that last game if they're going to finish this off. And they need to finish this off. You need to be rested up and ready for Cleveland, because that's going to be a physical series if that's who it ends up being. The other key for Golden State in tonight's game is they turned the ball over way too many times. 17 turnovers. 17 turnovers that led directly to 22 Houston points. So if Golden State is going to get back on track and win this game and close out this series, you're going to have to eliminate those points in the paint. You're going to have to get some points of your own in the paint, and you can't have the costly turnovers. It seemed like there were a couple times in that game, in game four, that if Golden State could just go down and get a good look and maybe, you know, knock down a shot, cut it down to six, cut it to four, maybe the pressure swings over to Houston. We know Houston is playing for their life. You could have shifted that pressure back to them, and you could have changed the game and probably gotten out of there with a win. Houston shot 57% from the field in game four. Going to be a fun game to watch tonight, see which way that goes. Can Golden State step up? Does Steph Curry still have that concussion? Is that going to bother him? Should be a fun game to watch. And I'll say this, James Harden is absolutely amazing. Guy is absolutely incredible to watch. He's so strong. It's not always pretty. It's not always pretty to watch, but it is very, very effective. As we do every week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5, you know it has a mind of its own. You know it goes a number of different ways. But you know, like I told you before, I was down in Texas this week. There are a lot of people around the country that love watching Steph Curry play. Steph Curry, his game, it's a little bit different. And it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of changing a little bit of the game that we've grown up watching. And the reason for that, at least to me, when you watch Steph Curry play, and I'll be honest, there are certain players that I like to watch. There are certain players that I'm not that thrilled with watching. There are guys that are kind of must-see if they're on. Steph Curry, to me, is must-see. Because you never know what he's going to do. And the reason to me that he's kind of changing the game is because when you look at him, it's not a physical thing. It's not where you look at him and you say, well, physically, he's just so good. He's just such a good player physically. Well, he's not a very big guy. I mean, it's not like he's just overpowering. It's not like when you look at LeBron, you look at LeBron James and you say, he's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster. He's this freak of nature physically. That's not the case with Steph Curry at all. Steph Curry isn't this guy that's bigger, stronger, faster than everyone else. I mean, he's maybe 6'3". He's like a 180 dripping wet. But you know, the interesting thing about Steph Curry's game is when you look at it, it's not all the dunks. It's not the Michael Jordan playing above the rim or the Kobe Bryant or, you know, the Patrick Ewing. It's not this big, huge guy. It's not LeBron James he's just bigger than everyone else. Even someone like Kevin Durant, who has a little bit more of a smoothness to a game, more of an outside game, but he's still, you know, he's like 6'10". So, I mean, there's an idea with Steph Curry that you look at it and say, you know what? If we all just practice, couldn't we play like Steph Curry? I mean, it's not like he's this freak physically that's so much better than everyone else. He's just a really, really good player. He's just honed his game so much that when you look at his game, it's kind of changing the game because you say, if I worked hard enough, couldn't I do that? It's not physically. He's not 7 feet tall. He can't just jump out of the gym. But he has certain aspects to his game that make it so fun to watch. Today's Daily Dose Top 5. Players that Steph Curry's game resembles. Now, after him coming back from that concussion the other night, obviously the first player on the list might be Julian Edelman and what he did in the Super Bowl after he sustained a concussion, but we're not going to put Julian Edelman on this list. But I'm going to give you five players that when I look at Steph Curry play, kind of makes me think of. Because he does have a different game than we're seeing anywhere else. And so much of his game is his knowledge of the game, his understanding of the game, his intelligence. It's not that physical domination that we've always seen. Number five on our list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles, has to be his dad, Del Curry. He has such a quick release. He can get that shot off so quickly. He doesn't need much space. So many young shooters, and in coaching kids, and in coaching even high school kids, sometimes even college kids, they kind of have to load up that shot. It's catch, set, and shoot. He has such a quick release. It's catch and shoot, and it's gone. If you want to see Del Curry's release, you can go onto YouTube and look up when he scored 14 points in the fourth quarter versus the Detroit Pistons. He was playing with Toronto at the time. It was back in like 2002. final game of Del Curry's professional career. But it is such a quick release. Now you say, okay, quick release, how much does that do for you? Well, it's a quick release and it's very, very accurate. But the thing about that quick release is it changes the other parts of your game. Because if you know you've got to fly at me because I can get that shot off so quickly, I now have the shot fake. I now have the beat you off the dribble. I have so many other aspects to my game that are all opened up from that quick release. You want to study how to shoot the ball. I've always told kids, if you want to study some of the greatest shooters, study someone like Ray Allen, somebody like Reggie Miller. Now you got to take a look at Steph Curry. But if you want to see his release back about, 15, 20 years ago, go look at Del Curry. He's out there. He shoots it just like his dad did. Number four on the list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles. And when I say this, you're going to say, what? What are you talking about? Looks a little bit like Kobe Bryant. Wait. Don't turn it off. Don't turn it off. Defensively, he looks a little bit like Kobe Bryant. Because, and I know Laker fans, you're going to hate hearing this, Kobe Bryant has never been a great defender. He was okay at times, but he wasn't a great defender. And if you want to sit there and say, yes, he was. Should I bring up Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton in 2004? Because they abused Kobe and made him look foolish defensively. He was very, very athletic, but he never, that wasn't his thing. He was a sniper. He was a scorer. Defense, but what Kobe did and what Kobe understood, and this is what I'm starting to see in Steph Curry, what Kobe understood was that if I anticipate and I play the passing angles correctly, I can sneak over. I can do some stuff off the ball. Never going to be a great lockdown defender. Kobe was never a great lockdown defender. Anyone who tells you he was didn't watch it enough. But he was very, very good at sneaking off of his man, getting steals, sneaking off of his man, poking the ball loose and getting a teammate, a steal. In 2002, 2003, Kobe Bryant had 181 steals. Now, steals rarely come when I'm defending on ball. Every once in a while against, players that are inferior. But usually those come in help situations when I sneak over and I get a steal. It's because of your anticipation. It's because of your knowledge of the game. And Kobe Bryant was able to do that really, really well at times in his career. Do you know how many steals Steph Curry had this year? And I look at Steph Curry and I say, he's not a good defender. He had 163 steals this year. 163. It's the same kind of thing. He understands. He knows how to anticipate where the ball is going to go. His court savvy and his game awareness is so high that he finds ways to hide things defensively. Number three on our list that Steph Curry's game resembles a little bit, got to be Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller worked so hard without the ball, and I think Steph still has a long way to go in this regard because Reggie was constant. He never stopped moving. Every once in a while, you'll see Steph make a pass. He'll go weak side and he'll kind of stand and wait for a reversal. Reggie never stopped moving. It was running off of screens. It was coming off of angles. It was getting into the body of the defender and breaking off. Steph still has a ways to go here. But Steph Curry can be that type of player. And every once in a while, when you see him constantly moving, he does. He resembles, again, without the ball, not shooting it, just his movement without the ball looks a little bit like Reggie Miller to me. Number two on our list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. You might remember him back at LSU as Chris Jackson. But let me tell you why his game reminds me of his. And, back in 1996, the Chicago Bulls came to Denver and faced the Nuggets. I was fortunate enough to go see that game in person. Got to see Michael Jordan and those 96 Bulls with Rodman and Pippen and Ron Harper and a phenomenal team. One of the best teams ever. And somehow the Nuggets actually beat them 105-99. Jordan had 39. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf had 32 in a victory. But the thing about Mahmoud, such a good shooter. He also had a very, very quick release. Didn't need much space. He was only about 6'1", but he could get that shot off very, very quickly. He was a very, very underrated ball handler, just like Steph is. But if you watch, you can go back, you could probably Google that game. Go Google a game where Mahmoud scored, I think, like 51 on John Stockton against the Jazz. He had such a quick ball handle. Had it on a string. He was so deceptive with it, and it was so quick. Everyone always talked about the Tim Hardaway crossover. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's crossover was better than Hardaway's. It was so quick, and he changed speed, and he changed direction so quickly that he would lean one way and explode off the other side and beat a defender. And again, with that quick release, could get that shot off very, very quickly. A number of times that I look at Steph and think of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a very, very underrated ball handler. Number one on our list of players that Steph Curry's game resembles. Again, I'm not saying he plays, he's that guy. I'm not saying he's better than that guy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are aspects of his game that resemble that. As a playmaker, doesn't he remind you just a little bit of Larry Bird? He just sees the floor so well. He understands the game so well. We talked before, he has that basketball IQ. I understand where you're going to be. I understand if I drive here, what the defense is going to do. And as a result, I know that this guy is open. As a playmaker, there are times that his game is almost right on the edge of being like Pete Maravich. Sometimes it's almost kind of showy, even kind of the look away pass and make the pass for the layup, or look away and make the lob for the dunk. He's such an underrated passer that it makes it so much fun to watch. His playmaking ability at times reminds you just a little bit of Larry Bird. And again, all this stuff is below the rim. It's not this jumping and dunking. That's not his game. I don't even know if I've ever seen the kid dunk. But I love watching Steph Curry because he is changing the game. He is making it a little bit of a thinking man's game. And as you know, the Daily Dose is the thinking man's sports talk. Would like to thank you all so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the top five this week. Hey, thank you all for listening. I really, really do appreciate it. If you get a chance, share the podcast, give it to a friend, give it to a coworker, give it to a family member that might enjoy it. Again, you can hit me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. Same for Facebook. Check out our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And if you have a comment, if you have something you'd like to share with us, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can email the show directly. I do have some emails that we are going to get to at a future date, and I got to read some emails. I've actually got some really, really interesting things. As usual, have to thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. Would like to thank you all for listening so much. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.